And nothing was dead. Things were getting worse. What really solidified things was George Jackson's death. This had a reaction on the people that we were trying to accomplish all along to bring them together, you know? And we thought of, well, how could we pay tribute to George Jackson, because a lot of us idolized him, the things that he was doing, the things he was exposing about the system. So we decided that we would have a silent fast that whole day in honor of him. We would wear black armbands. So we did this. No one was to eat anything that whole day. This had an effect. We noted that if the people could come together for this, then they could come together for other things, you know? Now, it wasn't our aim. We wasn't going around talking about overthrow the institution. See, they're gonna try to make out that this was our purpose, but this is a lie. What we were trying to do was to make everyone aware of what was happening to them, give us a chance to come together. In other words, let's resolve all this stuff that you people are doing to us. We tried to meet again, but at this time, no one wanted to listen now. You know, people are fed up, the manifesto's been gone out 3-4 months, and nothing has happened. And as I say, the conditions, they just got worse, man.
States of America. First of all, we want it to be known that in the past we have had some very, very treacherous experiences with the Department of Correction in New York State. They have promised us many things, and they have given us nothing except more of what we already got. Brutalization, murder inside this penitentiary. We do not intend to accept or allow ourselves to accept this situation again. Therefore, we have composed this declaration to the people of America to let them know exactly how we feel and what it is that they must do and what we want primarily, and not what someone else wants for us. We're talking about what we want. It seems to be a little misunderstanding about why this incident developed here at Attica, and this declaration here will explain the reason. The entire incident that has erupted here at Attica is not a result of the dastardly bushwhacking of the two prisoners September 8th of 1971, but of the unmitigated oppression wrought by the racist administrative network of this prison throughout the year. We are men. We are not beasts, and we do not intend to be beaten or driven as such. The entire prison populace, that means each and every one of us here, have set forth to change forever the ruthless brutalization and disregard for the lives of the prisoners here and throughout the United States. What has happened here is but the sound before the fury of those who are oppressed. We will not compromise on any terms except those terms that are agreeable to us. We call upon all the conscientious citizens of America to assist us in putting an end to this situation that threatens the lives of not only us, but of each and every one of you as well. We have set forth demands that will bring us closer to the reality of the demise of these prison institutions that serve no useful purpose to the people of America, but to those who would enslave and exploit the people of America. Our demands are such. We want complete amnesty, meaning freedom from all and any physical, mental, and legal reprisals. We want now speedy and safe transportation out of confinement to a non-imperialistic country. We demand that the federal government intervene so that we will be under direct federal jurisdiction. We want the governor and the judiciary, namely Constance B. Motley, to guarantee that there will be no reprisals. And we want all facets of the media to articulate this. We urgently demand immediate negotiations through William M. Kunstler, attorney at law, 588 9th Avenue, New York, New York. Assemblyman Arthur O'Eve of Buffalo. The Prison Solidarity Committee of New York, Minister Farrakhan from the Muslims. We want Huey P. Newton from the Black Panther Party, and we want the chairman of the Young Lord Party. We want Clarence B. Jones of the Amsterdam News. We want John Wicker of the New York Times. We want Richard Roth from the Courier Express. We want the Fortune Society. Dave Anderson of the Urban League of Rochester. Blind Eva Barnes. We want Jim Engren of the Democratic Lit Chronicle of Detroit, Michigan. We guarantee the safe passage of all people to and from this institution. We invite all the people to come here and witness this degradation so that they can better know how to bring this degradation to an end. This is what we want. We want to have.
Everyone's in the yard, and there was a lot of tension because you could see that these people were getting ready to come in. They was going to use force. Now, from where I was, I'm in like in the middle of the yard, so to speak, near the trench. And the next thing I know is this big helicopter flying over us, and tear gas is coming from everywhere. It's a whole lot of shooting going on. So naturally, everyone is running for cover. You know? So I'm next to the wall, and I know around me that everyone is hiding their face and guys are spitting rags and putting it to their nose. But what I know is troopers start coming from everywhere. Then I start seeing different people fall. You know, they were shot. Guys was losing their hands and shot in the head and the neck. Like it's been stated about indiscriminate firing. I don't see it as indiscriminate firing because the people that were shot and the people that were killed, they were selective, man. How you gonna call this indiscriminate, you know? You take the troopers that came in, they wasn't hurt. You know, now if it was indiscriminate, why didn't some of them get hurt? You see, why was it just inmates and hostages that got shot, that got killed? At the same time, the helicopter was flying overhead. The helicopter was telling everyone to surrender and they wouldn't be hurt. A lot of people were doing this and they were still getting shot. They was putting their hands up. This helicopter just kept flying around talking about surrender and don't get hurt. So after everyone seen what was happening, they didn't come out. It was a slaughter-like, man. It was people were defenseless, all right? They had sticks and homemade weapons to defend themselves, but this doesn't compare, man, with magnums and carbines. Well, this is ridiculous, you know?
State troopers told me to jump in the grass. They told me to fall on my face and start crawling, you know, which I did, you know, I didn't have no other alternative. You know, as I was crawling, you know, state troopers were kicking us in the sides, you know, and some state troopers were saying, you know, that if we raise our heads anytime, you know, our heads will be blown off. Yeah, this is the things, you know, and after we reached a certain place, some of us, you know, the officers told us, man, to get up, you know, and undress. And it gave us an approximation of a few seconds to undress, you know, which is impossible, you know, to undress. Many of us had heavy clothes on. You know, so many of us that didn't undress, many of us were beaten, you know. After we took out our clothes, he made us go through the normal routines that they do have here, which is to lift up your organs, your anus, you know, they look up in your anus and what have you. And then they told us to run to a particular wall. When we ran to a particular wall, they told us to put our hands on top of our heads. So we reached a particular wall, and then we started walking in circles. You know, many of us started being singled out. For what reason, I do not know. I know that I was singled out, you know, and placed before the wall, you know, a wall they had But before that, when I was placed before the war, they put an X on my back. You know? We theorized that this was intentionally done, man, to exterminate us. Because we were the last ones to leave the yard. We was the last ones. All of us were finger out, man, as ringleaders. You know, which really, man, if we look at it objectively speaking, we wasn't ringleaders. You know, there was more than 2,000, almost 2,000 inmates in that yard. You know, everybody, man, didn't have to stay in that yard. If anybody did stay in that yard, it's because they wanted to stay in that yard, you know? They put us before the wall. You know, they told us to put our heads on the wall and spread as far as away from the wall, which automatically, man, it started, this position started hurting our heads, you know? And many many brothers, man, made various attempts to fall because they just couldn't resist it no more, you know? But they couldn't, man, because if they was to fall, man, you know, the fear itself within these brothers, man, you know, they remained in this position for the simple fact that, the state troopers said that if we move, we were dead people, you know, dead men, you know.
Taking you in these A block where they took me, they had officers lined up all in the hall everywhere, you know, you were scared to death because you were stripped naked, you know, all you seen and heard was a lot of nasty words, you know, being thrown at you and so forth, and everybody was swinging out with sticks or rifle butt to try to hit you to knock you down and so forth, you know. No, this is inside A block, you know, coming in the block, you know. And as you go up the stairs, everybody's hitting you across your back with a stick, one of these bullies and so forth, you know, calling you all kinds of niggas, you know. They call them the black niggas, they call them the white niggas, they call them the Puerto Rican niggas and so forth, you know. You get up on the gallery, you run into a whole lot of troopers up there, you know, a few correction officers, they cracking you all upside the head and everything, you know. Talking about run, nigga, run, you know. You gotta run through a line of them, everybody's beating on you, you know, throwing you in the cell naked with three or four men, you know. Coming by and telling you you better not be caught sitting down, nothing like that there, you know. Different ones may come by and they may spit on you inside, you know, and so forth like that there.
Thrown in a cell, three at a time. No blankets, no clothes. Beat by the troopers on the way down and by the correction guards with clubs and rifles. They would line up on two sides. As you would come down, they would hit you with the sticks and the guns, you know, spit at you. If you fall down, four of them would come on top of you and start beating you with the back of the rifle butts, you know. Once you got in the cell, they take you out of the cell. They give you a beat, throw you back in the cell. They wouldn't feed you. When they did feed you, they put their hands in the food, spit in the food, stuff like that, right in front of you, you know. They'd come down and wake you up every few minutes for harassment, shake on the bars, get up, you know. They wouldn't let you sleep. This went on for days. Left the windows open. No clothes. No shoes.
I was the first one that came up on the south side. And while I was laying there, I noticed that they brought Frank Smith in. Now when they brought him in, he was in pretty bad shape. His head was banged up. And all that night, they were harassing both of us, but they did more to him than me. You know, they had a thing about that they believe he was one of the men that had cut out one of the officers' testicles. And they kept accusing him of this. They threatened to bring him out and cut his testicles out, you know? I don't believe he got any sleep that night. Going back to the yard, on my way over, I did notice him on the table with a football under his neck.
My name is Frank Smith. I was taken out of the yard, and I was put on a table, nude. My body, at present, have cigar burns, cigarette burns all over it. My testicles at times bother me now from cigarette butts, sticks, rifles, laying on the table with my head looking up at the catwalk being spit on, hot shells thrown on my body, cigarettes thrown on my testicles. Every once in a while, they had a football under my throat. I had to lay in that position, and if the football fall, I am looking up at a shotgun, and if it fall from under my chin, I would be killed. I was taken off the table and brought to this front door out here and was brutally assaulted for 45 minutes to an hour. This mark that I have in my head, a scar right there, as you can see, I received that. My back, my arms, my legs, everything. I couldn't even walk. That's how bad I was beaten. by five pigs. And each and every one I know. I was taken to the hospital, treated as a beast. No assistant at all. I was laid on the floor, I was stepped on. Five or six times I was taken in a room by myself and was beat in my testicles, almost to the extent that I passed out with a rifle butt. Nigga, black power, huh? Black power, huh? That's all was said to me while I was in that room. Criticizing, provoking, trying to make me be the animal that he is, to reverse the victim to the criminal to the victim. I was taken out of the hospital, brought back outside where you come in the door, dumped on the floor in the elevator, was kicked, beat, all the way upstairs in maximum security, and thrown in a cell, nude, with the windows open, nothing in the cell but a mattress and a pillow and a toilet and a sink for 2 days. I tried to cover up with my pillow. Can you imagine 250 pounds getting under a pillow? State troopers and police came by and said, nigga, get out from under that pillow. We wanted you to have a cover. We would give you one. You gonna die in the morning, nigga, so it don't make no difference nowhere whether you freeze or we kill you.
So I stayed in A block overnight. The next day, three officers came, and they asked me my name and number. I told them they took me out of the cell, and they marched me down the hall, you know, where it was a lot of glass, and I didn't have no shoes on. And I'm trying to pick my spots to walk, so I won't walk on these glass. And he told me, keep walking, don't pick no spots. So I had to walk on a lot of glass, you know. And I was, you know, it was very painful. They took me on up to the box, and they smacked me around up there, you know, and run me down the gallery into a cell.
We placed in cells, and this is when they started bringing out certain people. I was brought out and placed over there in HBZ. After I got over there, they beat me downstairs, and you know, it was about eight of them, you know. And in my attempt to fight back, I got my arm busted over here. And they drugged me on upstairs, put me in the cell. They did this to a lot. A lot was less fortunate than me, you know. Some of them got busted heads and broke arms.
Yeah, three guys and me and two other fellas was in the same cell. They hosed us down. And after they hose it down, they come around later looking for the guys, you know, looking for John Jones and, you know, different fellas, you know. They had pictures and whatnot. Then they came to the cell and he said, oh, you're Frank Locke, come on out, you know. He said, we got our orders to remove you. I said, remove me where, man? You know, he said, no, man, come on. So he's with other two state troopers, you know, one had the pump and one had the walking with the gun like that. So they had me to put on a pair of pants. And then they took me on out, we was required to walk on broken glass, you know, in the hallway, you know. And I walked and they took me to the D block over there where the ditches had been dug by some of the inmates. They took me over by the ditches and they asked me, was I going to beg for my life, you understand? So I refused to say something, say anything, because I resigned and they was going to shoot me. Here's a guy here with a gun like this, a 38 stub nose like this, and another guy with a rifle and all this shit. And I thought that they was going to, you know, like kill me, you know. So I didn't say anything. So just a few seconds or so, a guy hollered out to the break-in window, correction officer. I'll never forget his face as long as I live. He told him to bring him back. You know, he's not the one bringing. So they brought me back, you understand? And they took me back and they put me in another cell down the gallery. Then after I was down there for about a half an hour or so, then they came and they opened each cell individually, you know? And they started, you know, beating up guys like that. And that's kicking them. Some guys were unconscious and things like that. And they beat me, you know, and they dragged me, blood all over the place. Excuse me, then they came down, they watered us down. Then they shot the tear gas in. Each cell, pop, pop, pop. I don't know where they get that much ammunition from. They were shooting tear gas into each individual cell.
When I was removed from A block on the flats, we call it, just as all the other brothers were, we were made to walk barefoot. I had glass in my feet, you know, and as I was walking, they were, you know, banging me and cursing and all this stuff, you know, until I got up to HBZ. I got another beating. And while I was in the cell up there, they removed me to take x-rays. When I went down to the hospital, I got another beating by the state police and the correction guards when I went for x-rays. When I came up again, they put me in a different cell. I was removed from that cell and brought back to the original cell, which I was in one cell. They took me down, I think, 14 cell. Then they came down, three of them opened up 14 cells, says, you belong in one cell. On the way down, they beat me again and brought me back in one cell. That was the last time I was beaten at, you know, at that time. But there's been continuous harassment, you know. And, of course, you know, we're being locked up 24 hours a day.
How things been since? Not very much different, you know. Food is still the same. The doctors, they still act the same. You have a few officers that do try to relate with you. But then, from time to time, you see some officers that were helping to beat you up. So, right away, man, this messes up everything, you know?
We're not living, we're existing out there. That's a day-to-day existence, too, believe me. You see, and we're kept in a cell like a whole 23 and three-quarter hours a day, you see, every day. And the only session being personal family visits and visit to your lawyer, or in the sense it's now interview with the news media, you see. That's the only time you come, otherwise you stay in. And they come by every day and they serve you your food in your cell. You don't go anywhere, you see. So now this has been going on right now 5 months. How long is it gonna go on? We don't even know. At the best guess, I figure, who knows, another 7 months or so. Each person has an individual cell. They now have us in a cell where they have a steel slab, you know, welded to the wall. This is supposed to be the bed. And they have a unit which is composed of the urinal and the face bowl in one unit, stainless steel. See, this is to prevent you from bringing up their porcelain sinks and things, you know what I mean? And you stay in there, and you're housing, like I say, it's a small area, very small area, but it's big enough for one man, but for 23 hours, you know, every day. They have a yard, yes, we must agree. They do have cubicles up on the roof that one man at a time can go in, see? So they lock you all off. You got a grating over your head, you know, steel grating over your head, and you go in there for about 5 to 10 minutes. And that's exercise. They give you one ball, a handball or something, and you can throw it up against the wall by yourself. That's it. So that's, you know, your recreation. You get this 5 times a week if they're not busy. If they're busy, you know, processing people, it'll be 3 or 4 times, you see. You know, by raising your voice, you can speak to the man next to you, the man up or down from you, you see. But that's the extent of any communication you have, you see. Each day I try, you know, I try a little harder. I say, well, listen, what I do mainly, I read a lot. I do a lot of studying. I spend most of my day studying and reading. So I don't see anything else to do in there. There isn't anything else. You sit up there and you go crazy. See?
Well, in the cell up there, you have 2 state blankets, 2 state sheets, and you have books that you know, that you was allowed to get. We may have a few old papers, you know. You may have cigarettes, different candies that you buy from the commissary, you know.
Did you lose a lot of things after that?
Yeah, I lost everything. The only thing that I had got back was maybe a few pitches. But for some reason, I lost everything. I mean, you know, they stole everything, rather. I had just got a box from home with a lot of clothes, you know, silk, shorts, and I had brand new sneakers, you know. 2 pairs of sneakers I lost. I lost about maybe 3 or 4 sweatshirts, you know. I lost a lot of personal pictures of my family, you know. I lost my personal watch. I lost my personal eyeglasses, you know. A lot of law material I had, you know. A lot of law books I had, and a lot of important, you know, personal letters I had. All types of clothes and, you know, personal things that I had for years.
I got arrows in my trial, 1 mile long. I have been fighting my case up until the time 9th. I had no further proceedings. I can't take no further proceedings until I get my papers, because the big head hog of the institution, for some reason, unbeknown to me, took it upon himself to destroy all of our legal work and clothes and personal property. Totally destroyed it. Why? He don't have to answer for that. The people should know why. What did the clothes do? The clothes made the difference because you wear them? Is that the reason they was destroyed? Is he authorized to do this? Who authorized him to do this? The governor? Is he authorized to do this? That's evading or depriving a man of his privacy, his property. This is his. That's the only thing that I have to perfect my case with. My briefs, my records. But he destroyed these. He burned them. He buried them. Took our legal books. No doubt in my mind, distributed them to the law library. I have nothing left but 2 shirts. Out of everything that I had, and 1 opposition from the Second Circuit Court out of all of my papers.
And then we got this phony grand jury sitting, which is a big joke. Officials are trying to whitewash the whole thing through this grand jury process. And as usual, it'll probably fall back that the inmates are the culprits, where actually the state officials are the culprits, you know.
They sent me down some institution charges saying that I'm charged with taking hostages out of a metal shop and charged with hostages up on the catwalk. This is what they got on some type of administration charges against me. But see, this is what they're doing here. They are sending people up around these cells up there every day. They come by offices, you know, and they look at you, and they hook a story up and say that you was here, you was there, you know? And these are the things they're doing. They're giving guys parole, saying that help us place this guy in this area and so forth like that, and we'll make sure you go home. Telling guys lines like this here, you know? It's terrible when you know that this is a lie and how they're using people, you know, how people let them use them like this here, you know? They're trying to make it seem like 100 or 500 guys kept 2,000 inmates out in the yard. Now, this is impossible. You know, 1,200 inmates out in the yard. Now, how the hell is 100 guys going to keep 1,200 guys in the yard? And this is what they're trying to do to the public, show the public this.
You know about the mayor. They got the thing called special correspondence with attorneys and legislatures and governors and judges and like that. They're not supposed to read or open according to rule number 3 of their own rules. But what they do with the mail, they come right on down the gallery, open the mail, and read it and see who wrote it. Here's a guy who got a letter from his lawyer in Chicago. So the guy took it and he read it, and the guy said, "Man, you're not supposed to read this." So I hollered to him to come down here and read these rules, because I had a copy of all the rules that comes down. He said, "I got orders to." So I said, "Man, you're going against your own rules." I said, "Now you want us to obey rules, and you don't want to obey rules like that." So now guys are refusing, you know, like legal mail, you know.
Now they got another thing going. They got a policy they're going to put your relatives in prison, you see. Now, this is another thing. This is another gambit Oswald is using. He says now that they can examine illegal mail. They can examine. Now, examine means, like I said, they're dealing with semantics. You always get involved with semantics with them. They say examine. We will not read it, but we will examine. Now, tell me, how can they examine a letter without reading it? You see, you can examine an envelope. You see, it's for the contents of contraband, etc. But how can you examine a letter without reading it? It's impossible. We will not censor the letter. Now, your family, if your family happens to write you something that they don't like, then they're going to send a letter back to your family. You will never even read it. So this is a thing where they're involving you, bringing your family in prison. They tell them out there what to say to you in here.
And then they give you earphones, you see, so they say you got earphones, you can communicate with the outside world, you can hear programs. And their programs, they are designed to keep you in here. Sports is wonderful, but a man can't exist off sports. You got to know what's said about life. And you're not going to hear it on the radio. You won't hear it on the radio. You got to get in the book.
I got studies. We have classes to get to know ourselves. As I say, people of all hue, not just black. People of all color, oppressed people. We are studying to learn ourselves, because we have no time to do nothing else but study, because we're in our cell 24 hours a day. We goes into the political science of this world that we live in, and we deals with it. We understand the mechanism. We deals with that. We see. We studies. So we got to be familiar with the problem. We have approximately 23 men on my side, which is the east side. We have a few over there that's education, you know, wise to a relatively degree. They have a little knowledge about certain aspects, such as dealing with semantics, history, arithmetic, you understand, the political vices of the world. And we and them, we expound on these things. So we exchange our ideas and the things that we know, and we research, and we deal with it. Communication would have to be hollered, a note. You understand, we all in one line. You understand, about 8 by 6 or 7 cell. And at certain times of the day, like me, I sleep in 16. If I want to speak about something, I can speak loud enough and everybody can hear it. And it's generally the same way when we are dealing with one specific thing, such as I told you, arithmetic, history, and so forth and so on. If there's a man not in one, he relays it to me, and I relays it down to 25. That way, we continuously try and keep some kind of communication, because that's the only kind of education we're gonna get. We don't receive any other.
We are all human beings. We have all made errors in one time or another, whether you're in prison or on the street. People outside should awaken themselves to the facts of what are going on now in our system, in our country. People have to unite. There must be unity. In prison we have unity. We have unity in Attica. There's strong unity and solidarity. They cannot stop that anymore. No matter what they do, they cannot break our unity or solidarity. And on the street, it's the same thing. People must have solidarity and unity together as one. All nationalities, religions, ethnic backgrounds, whatever they are, black, white, they all must unite as one in unity to attain that one goal of fairness, equality, and humanity.
We are not criminals in prison, you know. We are people that, for various reasons, we came to jail because of our conditions. In many cases, we're economical in nature. This is not places for us, man, you know, and we want to go back, you know, to the community, man, and try to bring the people to the awareness as far as what's happening within these prisons. September 13th is not something that was revolutionary in nature. This did not start by one man, you know. It did not start by one man, 12 men, or 50 men they have now. This started by the conditions which united all the people within these various blocks. No man should be in prison. They should be exterminated or destroyed, you know. If anything, it should be put back into the community and let the people in the communities run these prisons, not these profiteers, you know, who they only run the prisons for profit, you know, and for personal gain, and to create more animosity, more racism, and more exploitation, you know, because this is only a concentration camp for exploitation. That's all.
The inmate now, since the 13th, has been enlightened to some extent to the purpose of him being a man, a human being, be what color he is. He identify with himself more. He seeks the problem at hand. He has dealt with the problem at hand. He has laid it out, and he done picked it, and then screened it, and then looked into it, and then found out what is wrong and what is happening, what is right and what is wrong, what is good and what is bad. He is thinking, because as I told you, that's all we have time to do is think. Even after dealing with the problem and knowing what the problem is and has been exposed, 43 people, there have still been no consideration. All rhetoric, everybody's talking about, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. When you gonna do this? The problem is now. And it's gonna continue. And the people here understand this. And my brothers understand themselves, because I understand myself more so now than I have ever in my life. And what I am giving you and the people, I want them to know that they are killing us. And something has got to be done about it. If you care at all, do something about the situation at hand, please. As long as you take a man, a person, or a woman, and treat them as a beast, you're going to always have a problem in these concentration camps. You will always have one. Because what is happening in these institutions is the most cruel and inhuman punishment and treatment that any person can be exposed to. And believe me, I'm a victim of it. I know. I know so good, because when I walk out that door, I don't even know whether or not I get back to my cell. That's how much my life worth. If I go in my cell, I don't know whether or not I wake up in the morning. That's how much it's worth. Because I know my life don't worth one penny. But to me, it's worth more than anything that you could give me. Because as I told you before, my life is for my people. And as long as I live, I'm going to think about this. I don't care what you do, or what you say, meaning the administration. My ideology will always remain, because death is now. I couldn't be no further dead than I am now. That's what's happening in these institutions. Not here, everywhere. The same problem exists, and it's going to continue to exist until the people do something about it. What I see is this for the people in the street. I see, wake up. Stop hiding. Stop talking about it don't exist. Stop talking about you don't understand it. Stop talking about that cold water flat you live in is good enough for you. Stop talking about where you in jail and you getting 3 meals a day. Other than that, wake up. Because the same thing is happening to me is happening to you. And deal. Petition. Rallies. Let the people, let the governor, let the president and people that in a position to do something about this know how you feel about your sons and your daughters that's incarcerated. Other than that, wake up. Because nothing comes to a sleeper but a dream.
Thing I just like to sum up with, the way I put it was to sum it up aptly. The state's official conduct through their committed acts of repression, oppression, racism, and their callousness in the brutalization and premeditated murders of the human beings which occurred at Attica is the product of official lawlessness incompatible with a civilized system of what society should be. If there be true justice, then these officials and this kind of a system must be destroyed, just as cancer must be destroyed, and a system rebuilt upon the true concepts of humanity and equality. We in Attica are not the criminals, we are the victims. The criminals are the Rockefellers, the Mancusis, and the rest of the officials who committed the atrocities that have occurred.
We Are Attica, compiled from interviews with Frank Lott, Frank Smith, Carl Jones-L, George Nieves, Roger Champin, Donald Noble, and Jerome Rosenberg, all of whom were, until recently, maximum security inmates at Attica State Prison. In April 1972, the men in Housing Block Z at Attica were separated from one another and scattered throughout New York State's prison system. The interviews were arranged with the cooperation of the New York State Department of Correctional Services and the Attica Defense Committee. The New York State Department of Correctional Services is located at 99 Washington Avenue, Albany, New York, 12210. The Attica Defense Committee is located in the Prudential Building, 28 Church Street, Buffalo, New York, 14202. The interviews were conducted in the presence of a parole officer and a defense attorney, both of whom took notes. Tapes of the Attica Prison Rebellion by Dolores Costello and Paul Fisher. Drum performances by the Royal Drummers of Upper Volta, produced by Dolores Costello. Technical production by David Rapkin. We Are Attica was produced by Bruce Soloway, Pacifica Radio, New York.
Hello.